When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, friends. Hey, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast once again. So far, since Tuesday, this will probably be the third daily episode, fourth, something like that. Anyway, we're finding there's a lot to think through. There's a lot to contemplate, a lot to figure out as we navigate this crisis, the coronavirus pandemic. And wanted to just bring up a brief topic and hopefully have a brief conversation about it. And that's this. This came up in one of my, this came up in my local discipleship group this past Sunday morning. So we met online. And one of the kairoses that came up, kairos is a word we use just for like what you're noticing that's going on in your life, positive, negative. It's kind of a consolation and desolation. If you're familiar with Ignatian prayer, kairos is, well, I'm saying this not necessarily for your sake, Matt. But for our listeners,
you look like you're just talking to me, though. That's why.
I know it's confusing, but a lot of people might listen to this later, Matt. So keep that in mind as you talk. Anyway, so it's if you're familiar with consolation and desolation, that's how we use the word kairos. Is like that. Those are noticings that where we either feel an absence of God's presence or something that's confusing. Something that's fills us with joy, you know, that kind of thing. So anyway, one woman that's part of this group was saying that during times like this, we were talking about our second axiom, which is that God is just like Jesus. And she was saying that she finds herself reaching for, in times like this, the phrase, God is in control. And she's doing that to try to comfort herself and to try to comfort those that she cares for. But because God is just like Jesus, she knows that there's something weird about saying that, that doesn't actually feel very comforting. And she's trying to figure out kind of what to say instead, but she definitely reaches for God is in control. And I've heard a lot of people say that, as well, that, hey, don't worry about this virus thing, 'cause God is in control. So, so why not say that, Matt?
Thanks, dude. I need permission to talk this out, Ben, because my thoughts aren't cogent.
No.
And when you think you think with your mouth, you're always like two words away from being heterodox.
Right.
You know?
So don't all that to say that little asterisk, a little caveat. We're trying to work this out, but like the confession is that doesn't feel quite right to say that God is in control.
Yeah.
But we do want to affirm.
Yeah.
Right? Like a classical we do want to affirm God's sovereignty, but perhaps that doesn't mean that he is meticulously, actively controlling all events, like sending a pandemic for some sort of reason.
Yeah, I think that's one of the ways to answer this question of the problem of evil and theodicy, what's typically called theodicy. It's sort of the, you know, more reformed Calvinist understanding. You know, I think R.C. Sproul is famous for some kind of quip or quote that God, there isn't a molecule in the universe that isn't exactly where God wants it. And I find that that was the faith I came to when I became a Christian, and I walked in that way of seeing the world and thinking about the world for a long time, but ultimately it became incoherent to me and unlivable. Because I had to begin to, there's all kinds of complex theological arguments. There's primary causation and secondary causation. You know what I mean? There's God's decretive will and the will
permissive he gets accomplished. Will.
And then his permissive will. There's all these different theological delineations, and I learned them all, and I tried to inhabit them. But ultimately, here's what struck me. When I believed that stuff, the things I held most central and important about God, I couldn't say when life hit the fan to people. Like like when somebody's baby had died, or when somebody's husband got cancer, or when somebody's spouse committed an affair, or when somebody had an addiction that they I couldn't I knew it was pastorally unwise to say, well, God caused this.
Yes. Yeah, because God, and your role is to, if you figure out the reason, maybe that'll help you.
God is in control of everything, and so he's controlled this right now. Because it did one of two things. It turned God into a monster.
Right.
And or it was devastating to people.
Yeah.
And so I found myself not sharing my most precious, treasured, important theological convictions to people when they actually needed theological conviction.
Right. They needed some word of hope, but your resources were not there to actually offer something that actually brought any hope.
Right. Now I could sort of go abstract and push it away, like, well, you know, we don't know why God allowed this, but he did it for some greater good, or it's ultimately everything works out for good for those who love him, or there's some greater glory here, or you know, God gives free will to people, and they use. There were all kinds of ways to push the buck away from God, but it only takes one or two questions to reconnect all these evil tragedies to God.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was and then I also realized, like, that's not really, I mean, so I want to affirm that God is sovereign. And God ultimately gets what he wants. But I also just want to say, like, the scriptures wrestle about this. Like,
yeah.
Like the whole book of Job is written to people who presume that God is this tit for tat justice machine.
Right. And basically it's written to say, is he really? Because what about this? And what about this? And what about this?
Yeah, it's written to say, look, there's all kinds of factors influencing reality that you can't see or know ever.
Yeah.
And that, you know, so, and there's other things too. Jesus, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born like this, you know, and Jesus just doesn't answer the question like that. So, I guess now, like, God is in control. I mean, would I say that to somebody whose parent just contracted this virus and passed away? And what does that mean to them? Mm-hmm. What would that even mean to them?
Yeah.
God killed your spouse.
Right. Yeah.
God killed your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I hear God is in control, I think here's what it does. Gerald just said this in chat. Gerald, you're right. Sometimes the God is in control is an attempt to go back to our comfortable box that we place God in.
Mm-hmm.
He's drawing on Brueggemann's work in Prophetic Imagination. He says, we may need to sit and lament in the disorientation for a bit.
Yeah.
Amen. When I hear God is in control, what I hear is, this stuff makes me anxious, and I'm afraid, and you can't be anxious and afraid and have faith, so we have to push the anxiety and fear away so we can get back to trusting in the victorious Christian life. And I just want to say, look, we would have to cut out a third of the Psalms if you couldn't be anxious, afraid, or sad.
Right.
Like, let's not use God is in control as a placebo or as a panacea to get rid of this fear. Mm-hmm. Let's name it. Let's face it.
Yeah.
I don't know how viruses work. I don't know where they are in your good creation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it all. I don't know if I'm a young Earth creationist. I don't know how these fit. or did they exist before the fall? If I'm an old earth creationist, God, I don't know why, I don't know the role they play in your creation. Are they part of, are they part of your good creation? Are they part of corruption of creation?
Mm-hmm.
Will there be viruses in the new heavens and the new earth?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I often feel about like this with mosquitoes too. Like scientists can't figure out why they exist.
Yeah.
They're worthless.
They're from hell. They're demonic.
Little demon.
I know the answer
creature.
To that theologically.
No. So here's what I'm playing around with saying instead of God is in control. And that is God is love.
Yeah.
I don't know why this is happening. I don't know what's going to happen to us. I don't know what's going to happen to your sick grandparent or your sick child. But I know God is love. And his love holds all of the reality together. At the center of our reality isn't a abstract volitional will.
Mm-hmm.
At the center of reality is the Trinity, which is a relationship of love. The fabric of existence is relationality in love. And that love, as we say in our podcast intro, holds all things together. And sometimes it holds things together in ways that are inexplicable to us. Mm-hmm. Like this, Paul says this in Romans, what is it, Romans 11?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, all these things, all these awful things are happening. Right. And what should we say about this? Right? Should we? Can anything separate us from the love of God and Jesus?
Right.
So when Paul gets back to the bedrock of what do I know to be true in the midst of life hitting the fan, in the midst of coronavirus, in the midst of people dying, in the midst of being losing my family and friends and my identity,
right?
He says, here's what we know. Nothing can separate us from God's deterministic, volitional, meticulous
right.
will.
Right.
That's not what he says.
No.
He says nothing can separate us from the love of God.
The love of God. Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Neither height nor depth nor principalities nor powers nor persecutions nor famines. Nothing can separate us from that.
Yeah.
And I think that, yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
Are you tracking with me, Ben?
I am tracking with you.
Am I going to lose my ordination for saying this?
It's not up to me. I'm not a bishop. But I'm tracking with you. I think it's all throughout the scriptures there, but it does. I think the reason people are afraid to let go of God is in control is because they're afraid there is no bedrock, right? They're afraid that there is no, I'm hearing a little feedback there from,
you're good now.
Okay. I think people are afraid that there is no bedrock, that we can't actually offer a word of hope. Like the two choices are God is in control or I don't know, you know, like a shrug, like good luck, buy some ammo, you know, those aren't the only options that we have. Like I think what you're saying is there is a center, there is a bedrock, there is a word of hope. There is some sense of solid, and I hesitate to use this word, but certainty, but what we're certain
solid
is
ground.
Solid ground.
Confident. A proper confidence
that we can have, and it's not in the fact that God is controlling everything. It's in the fact that God is love, and he's present, and he's working in the midst of all these things. And he's turning them, to use, you know, another part of Romans 8. Isn't it Romans 8? He's working all things for good. So he's taking what he's got here, and who knows why viruses are here and why this is happening and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he's taking it all, and inside of his love, he's working in the midst of it for our good and for the good of all creation that he loves.
Yes.
So yeah, it's a good word. I think it's a helpful word. You know, if you've got kids, you know, who are picking up on what's going on here and they're scared, I think that's a good word to be able to actually bring some real comfort. If you're, you know, a pastor, if you're a leader, and people are scared and they're afraid and they need a word of hope, I think this is a talking about, hey, everything we're going to be okay because God is love. And when we say we're going to be okay, like ultimately that we may die and we might get sick, but we're going to be okay because God is love.
Yeah. But death isn't the worst thing that can happen to me.
That's right.
I'm a Christian.
Yep.
Yeah. the worst thing that happened to me is that I would root my confidence in something other than God's love. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking too, Ben, about, oh, rats. I think I just lost it.
Shoot.
This makes for great live radio, live recording here.
Yeah, it's all good. I would say we would edit this out, but we don't normally get that sophisticated. We're not going to edit it out. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I forget what I was going to just share there. I think. Excuse me.
These are also things we would normally edit out if we were a little bit more sophisticated.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. Like, I don't know how love works. I don't know how this all works out. Like, as you're sharing this, I'm thinking about. John, is it John chapter 9? The raising of Lazarus?
Mm-hmm.
Is that 9 or 11?
That's 11.
Yeah, John 11. I'm thinking about that right now. I'm just thinking about how God's love doesn't prevent every bad thing from happening to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's actually something inherent in love that cuts against the grain of this phrase, God is in control. And that is, love is essentially, I think, uncontrolling.
Yeah.
Right? Love is uncontrolling.
Yeah. Love holds people with an open hand.
Love holds people to account and empowers people. And so, like, there's tons of mystery in that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that means we don't get what we want, so we can't use God.
Mm-hmm.
We don't use God to get what we want. And so sometimes Lazarus does die.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, yeah.
Yes. Well, and even before Jesus raises Lazarus too, the word of hope that he gives to Mary and Martha is the resurrection, which he raises him from the dead, but that's not the resurrection, right? Because Lazarus dies again.
Right.
And Jesus has to be raised from the dead. And eventually, like, that's the hope he gives them is not just that I'm going to raise him from the dead right now. Yeah. It's the resurrection of the dead, which is later for Lazarus and for Mary and Martha.
So that's where we're trying to think of a Christian response, rooted, framed,
yeah.
centered.
Yep.
And animated by love.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean then? So yeah. Then we don't meet for corporate worship, not because we're afraid of the virus.
Right.
Or because we've allowed the government to co-opt the church.
Mm-hmm.
We don't meet for corporate worship because we're loving our neighbors.
Right. As best we can tell, this seems to be the best advice on how not to spread this virus and how to flatten the curve. And, you know, all the things the experts are telling us. Is that large gatherings spread this further? And so, yeah, so it's an act of love. It's weird, but that is the act of love, is to say, for right now, we can't gather as a whole church until we get some more information. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I want to say this, though, too, Ben. I don't think it's the only way to love.
No, yeah, there's no shade on churches that are choosing to meet for a variety of reasons, right?
Well, I think one of the reasons why love scares us too is because love takes wisdom to live in, and we would rather just have rules.
Yeah.
Things, we just want things to be black and white. Just tell me what to do. Just give me the thing to do. So I, like, Ben, that's kind of how you started, right? Mm-hmm. I want to know the right thing to do so I can just get on with doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we don't have that and there's like gray everywhere, or there's like four good ideas.
Yeah.
Then we're just like, we go into sort of this paralysis,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think, just need wisdom.
Yep.
Well, I would love to hear from y'all about this proposal. Try out saying God is love as encouragement rather than God is in control. And his love is sovereign.
Yeah.
And his love holds all things together.
Yes.
And nothing can separate us from that love. And that's our comfort and hope.
Yeah.
Rather than some weird promise that ultimately God caused the person you love to die.
Yes. That's pretty good. Friends, if you're listening to this on the podcast, you can email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. You can reach out in that way. We'd love to hear if you have a story about how this has been helpful for you as a leader, questions, pushback, any of that kind of stuff as we continue to try to navigate and offer resources to help you navigate this pandemic and this crisis in real time. So we'll see you next time, friends. Peace.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.